This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
The Single Mom Success Podcast, episode 27.
I personally don't remember being like this, but again, I'm sure my father has an entirely different side of that story, but I personally do not remember being this moody.
Heather Wells and the Single Mom Blog present Single Mom Success, the place for single moms to find support, inspiration, and the path to their own success.
Hey everybody, and welcome to this week's Single Mom Success Podcast. I hope you're having a fantastic week so far. This podcast I'm doing in the middle of the week, which I usually try and do them at the beginning of the week, but my kids were off for the last 2 days. They had a 4-day weekend, and so every time I sat down to try and record, there was just a bit of chaos. So I just said, forget it, I will wait until after they go back to school, and I officially just loaded the last one into her carpool car, kissed her goodbye, and sat down right away to do this. So this week's podcast is actually one that's a little difficult for me because it's very difficult for me because it involves my son, Gage, and we have an appointment tomorrow for him to have another neuropsych eval. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's a neuropsychology evaluation. He's been having them since he was a toddler, to evaluate his progress, where he's at, struggles that he has, identifiable things that we need to work on or potentially make concessions for, things of that nature. It's a very helpful testing process for a child who's had a brain injury, so that we know specifically the areas that have been affected and that he struggles with. So it goes over, you know, fine motor skills, gross motor skills, things like spatial recognition, nonverbal IQ, verbal IQ, his ability to retain. There's just a ton of things. I end up getting a pretty lengthy report back after every neuropsych eval, but it's really helpful because I can take that and they can identify the places where he's really struggling and we need to help him or see if we can't get him, things that we need to work on. And then we develop a plan of, okay, these are the things that will help with that. Here's some, you know, exercises or things you can do at home that will help, you know, things like that. As well as then we also give a copy to the school so that his teachers and his special education department heads, they know where he's at, they know what he's going through, they know the struggles, and they can adjust his IEP and his learning plan accordingly to take into evaluation, you know, those things. This one is going to be a little harder for me, I think, and so this podcast is going to cover kind of two topics. The first is, this one is because my son is now 15. He's a sophomore in high school, and while he is doing far better than any doctor ever thought he would do, and I know that I've mentioned in the past, you know, kind of what happened with my son, and for those of you who are not familiar, who haven't listened to previous podcasts about it, my son actually, both my boys have acquired traumatic brain injuries from shaken baby. They were both shaken by their father, and he was convicted. He took a plea deal, but he was arrested and charged with a crime, and never really did anything to try and prove that he didn't do it. So it was a very difficult time for me, very hard. It was very, very hard for me to believe that a person would do something like that to their own child. I mean, you hear babysitters, nannies, you know, people who don't have a vested interest in your baby or their safety. Not that bond, you know, not the thing that parents should have for their child. And, but like I said, I mean, he was charged with it and, did a really good job proving himself guilty to everybody, including me. So after my son was hurt, my son Gage, he was actually hospitalized for a month and a half. He was in Children's Hospital, and they told me that he would very likely not survive his injuries. If he did survive his injuries, you know, that first night, he actually stopped breathing, had to be resuscitated. He technically died. I mean, he crashed. They were able to resuscitate him, obviously, but they were not all that certain he would survive the evening. But he did. And then after that, they said that because of the severity of his injuries, it would be likely that he would be in a vegetative state. He would have extreme or severe, rather, brain damage. And that it was very likely that he would have, you know, struggles if he ever, you know, was able to even leave the hospital. So, you know, and it was the hardest thing. It was the hardest thing that I've ever had to go through. And, you know, my baby, he was only 5 months old, and he was laying in a bed with tubes sticking out of him and intubated because he couldn't breathe on his own, having recurring seizures that wouldn't stop even though he was on, I think, 3 different types of seizure meds. The bleeding in his brain was so severe that his head swelled to the point where his ears stuck straight out from the side of his head, like straight out. He had to have a shunt or drain a hole. He had to have a hole put in his head to drain the blood out. And because there was so much bleeding, they had to give him a blood transfusion. And to this day, he still has a scar on the inside of his arm and his inside elbow, where they had to, because he was so tiny, they had to cut open his arm and put the IV directly into his vein and then stitch it up around his arm. And so he still got that scar. And it was horrifying. It was the worst thing ever to see your baby go through and not know if they're going to survive. And if they do survive, what the quality of their life is going to be. You know, what's going to happen to them. And it's really, I mean, as a mom, I sat there and thought about all this, you know, about everything. And it was a battle between being so happy that he had survived, but so scared because I didn't know what kind of life he was going to have now, or if he was even really going to have anything that would be considered a real life. I mean, I couldn't imagine watching my child grow up in a vegetative state. It would have killed me, you know? And, so it was a very difficult, difficult thing. But my son, he's stubborn. I should have known from that point that I would have my hands full with him for the rest of my life, his life. Because he's so stubborn. He fought so hard to come back. And, you know, he came out of his coma. He was in a drug-induced coma while he was intubated and while all this was going on. And when he finally showed signs of being able to breathe on his own, he was, you know, had the tube taken out, but he was in, like, a tent. They had, like, an oxygen tent over his head, which was odd, but it was progress. And then he started coming. They, you know, let him come out of the coma, and my son came out of his coma without even the basic skills that babies are born with. The basic, just inherent knowledge of how to nurse, how to eat. He had to be taught a sucking reflex again, because he didn't have it. And that was another worry, because if he didn't develop that, he didn't get that back, then he would have to be fed through a tube, right? For however long it took, potentially his whole life. So I spent many months and many sleepless nights just hoping and praying, and I don't pray to anybody and anything that was out there listening, for my son to be okay. And through this whole time, you know, he was just fighting. He was a huge, he's a big fighter. He likes to fight. Oh, and he'll fight about anything at this point now that he's a teenager, but he proved every single doctor wrong. Every doctor that thought he would be in a vegetative state, every doctor that thought there's no way this child's going to walk or talk or function or be anything close to normal because of the severity of his injuries, and my son proved them wrong. If you saw him today, you wouldn't know that there was anything wrong with him. You wouldn't know that he had any issues until he got upset about something. And now that he's a teenager, what it looks like is he's just being a snotty teenager, like he's being a butt. And sometimes he is. I mean, he's a teenage boy. He's being a butt. But imagine having a teenage boy, or rather, let's do this. Imagine having a 7 or 8 year old, or sometimes even a 5 or 6 year old, with the hormones and emotional state of a teenager. And that is what you have when it comes to Gage. So at 15 years old, for the better part, normal kid, but developmentally he is significantly delayed. It comes out in a lot of different ways. Anybody who's ever dealt with or is familiar with any type of brain injury, when you have a brain injury that affects the frontal part of your brain, so my son has permanent brain damage, and the frontal part of his brain, there was a good portion of the front of his brain that is just dead. It's dead. And it's never coming back. And when you have a frontal brain injury like that, it causes problems with your impulse control, anger management, executive function, fine and gross motor skills, which my son has developed, but he still has many issues. So his and they sort of tie in together. It's kind of crazy. I've learned a lot about how the brain functions, right? Like, so his gross motor skills are greatly impacted by his executive function abilities. And what executive function is put simply, very simply, basically multi-step process thinking. Okay, so people who do not have issues with executive function are capable of multitasking. They're capable of taking a problem and breaking it down into steps, getting 5-step problems and doing them step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, being able to do 2 things at once and having your brain process that, right? Like reading the paper and eating your breakfast, right? Or you know, walking and chewing gum at the same time, right? Like, there's so many different things that executive process covers. So my son Gage has a problem with that. So things like riding a bicycle, he has a very difficult time doing, and he can't ride a regular bicycle. In fact, I'm looking at the possibility of getting him one of those trike bikes, because he can't balance and do everything else that needs to be done when you ride a bike. So if you think about riding a bike, you have to focus on your balance, focus on your pedaling, focus on where you're going, paying attention, and being aware of everything around you. And you have to steer, right? So there's multiple things going on at once that your brain is processing. And for most of us, it's not a problem. For Gage, it's a problem because he can either watch where he's going and steer, or he can look down at his feet and pedal, but he can't do both. So he will pedal and he'll pay attention to pedaling, but he won't be watching where he's going. And the second you say, hey, you need to look where you're going, he looks up and his legs stop pedaling, because now his brain has to focus on that one task of watching where he's going and steering. So riding a bike, and then on top of that, trying to keep the bike up. So riding a bike has always been very difficult for him, and he never was able to actually manage it. And it became very scary to him as a kid. And because it wasn't something that he had to do, I never forced it. I never forced it. I didn't continue on. And it was something that it scared him a lot. And I can imagine, you know, and that's, I think, part of the reason why, you know, I'm able to deal with what goes on with Gage, because I can imagine how scary and how frustrating it must be to have your brain not work the way you know it should work, right? Like, he's cognizant and aware of the fact that he should be able to do certain things, but he can't. And that makes him very upset. And I can understand that that would be so frustrating. So, it, you know, and add that to the impulse control and the anger management, and then you've got a level of frustration and anger about it. And my son can be an explosive child at times, and he's very difficult to deal with sometimes, and stubborn, because he doesn't want to ever admit that he's wrong, which I think is just a boy thing, teenage boy thing. Maybe it's a teenager thing, period. I remember being pretty stubborn. I don't know where he could have possibly gotten it. though my father would probably say he knows exactly where he got it from. So we deal with all of these things, and this has been Gage's life. I mean, he had to learn how to sit up. He had to learn how to hold his head. He had to learn how to be able to balance himself. Like, you would get him to sit up and he would just fall over because he didn't have that ability to keep himself upright. You know, walking was delayed, talking was delayed. Everything has been delayed in his life, and it's taken a lot of work for him to get where he has gotten. And you know, I remind him of that every day, but it's been a very trying life for him. And so when our discussions roll around to now that he's 15, well, I can't wait to be able to drive a car. It's heartbreaking to me, because I know that in reality, he probably won't be able to drive a car. If he can't deal with enough multi-step thinking to ride a bike, odds of him being able to drive a car are slim to none. There's way too many things he has to focus on: traffic, lights, speed, rules of the road, other drivers, pedestrians. You know, not to mention the people who are out there just not paying attention. I don't know that it's something, you know, the gas, the brake, paying attention to all of those things. And when he gets overwhelmed, he sort of locks up, and then he would crash. You know, he would crash into somebody or something. Or so now is the time where we're having these discussions, and it's so difficult. Because he wants so desperately to have a normal life. And he he doesn't get that. He's not gonna get to have a normal life. And this is when it becomes really, really hard. And it's always been hard because these times where we've done the neuropsych evals, they're great for the information. It's good to know. But it's also so heartbreaking because there's almost always this, hey, we've identified this new problem or this new issue, or, you know, here's where your son is at and he's not progressed. He's staying where he's at. And as his mom, I sit there and it's so hard to hear that, because I want nothing more than for him to have as close to a normal life as possible, and to hear that, okay, your son's gonna be mentally 10 years old for the rest of his life, or developmentally he's never gonna go past 15, or, you know, or we're sorry, but yeah, he's gonna be, you know, he's never gonna be able to live on his own, not much less drive a car. He's never going to be able to live on his own, and that's so hard to process. And I'm hoping that that isn't the case. I mean, I'm always positive. I'm always trying to, you know, I'm always telling him, you can do things. It just takes you longer to process it. Sometimes it just takes you longer to pick it up. But you can learn things. You have been doing it your whole life. You have been proving everybody wrong. You've been showing everybody what you can do. So I'll be damned that now that you're 15, you're going to just give up and say, I can't do all these things because it's hard. So, you know, we work and we try and I push. And I'm always positive and trying to motivate him to not give up on himself. You know, because, you know, he is an emotional, moody teenage boy right now. And so I'm dealing with, you know, anytime there's a problem, you know, and maybe it's just teenagers in general. I personally don't remember being like this. But again, I'm sure my father has an entirely different side of that story. But I personally do not remember being this moody as a teenager. I don't remember being this confrontational as a teenager. But I could be wrong. But, you know, it can be something as simple as, you know, hey, I told you, you know, if you don't get this done, if you don't get your room taken care of, then you can't watch TV. Oh, so I'm grounded forever? That's what it is? Oh, you just can't wait till I just can't wait. And you want to get rid of me and you just don't like me being here. And it becomes this huge, bigger than it actually was ordeal. And that's how it typically is. A lot of people have a hard time understanding that and don't understand why I handle the situation the way that I do half the time. But my son likes to fight. And when he doesn't get what he wants, it's gratifying for him to start an argument and argue with me. So if I don't give him that, it takes a lot less time. Because arguing with him and anybody with a brain injury or a child with a brain injury who has executive function issues and the impulse control and processing, when he gets really upset, he doesn't process any kind of logic. You're not going to get him to see your way. You're not going to make him understand. His brain has stopped functioning. Everything except I'm pissed off and this is why. And if you're not going to argue with me, I'm going to change the subject until you will argue with me, because I'm pissed off. And that is the only thing that that's the only thing he processes when he's mad, period. And so, you know, working with him, trying to get him to work on that issue has been a challenge. But it's difficult to go through these neuropsych evals and get those, because of how it affects him and his life moving forward and, you know, what his adult life will look like. It's very hard, and it breaks my heart every time I don't think there's been a time where we've done a neurology evaluation where I haven't been just devastated for my son, you know, and I usually end up having to take a day being very upset, very unhappy, very sad for my son. And then the next day we dive into, okay, this is our reality. This is what we're working with. What's the plan? How do we move on? How do we focus on this? How do we address this issue? How do we help you get past whatever hurdle has been identified? But I have to take that day to process it because, and this is the second part of this podcast, I have to process not only the heartbreak from my son, but the absolute rage that I feel towards their father. Every time my son struggles or a new struggle identifies itself or a new issue comes up for him, I am so angry and enraged with the man who caused this. I sit and I think how unfair it is that my son had the life that he was supposed to have stolen from him. I sit and I think, God, what would not just Gage, but Connor, I mean, my other son, his injuries were not as severe, but he had injuries too, and they have affected him as well. Not to the extent as Gage's, but they have. And I stop and I think, I'm like, God, you know, what would your life have been like if this one person hadn't done what they did? This one thing. And it's not like he broke his arm and it healed and everything's okay. He took away the person that what my son was supposed to be. He took away the life that my son was supposed to have. And it makes me so angry for him. Every time I see him struggle, every time I see him get so upset with himself because he can't do something that his 8-year-old sister can do. And anytime I see the struggles that he has, I think, God, I don't know how I could possibly ever forgive this person. And, you know, it's funny because my daughter's dad, he, for some reason, he's always had it in his head that I still speak to the boys' father, that I forgave him, and that I was, you know, anytime we get into an argument about something that's gone on, I'm upset with him for doing something, or, you know, feel like, you know, he's done something that's not okay for our daughter, whatever, the first thing he says is, well, you forgave him, and you know, he did this, and it was the worst thing possible, and you still talk to him, and I'm like, I don't know where you get that, because I absolutely do not. I have no forgiveness in my heart for that man. None. And, you know, he's like, well, you know, how can you not? You mean you should forgive him. I can't. It's not something, it's not like he broke my heart and I just need to forgive him for that. I am faced every day with a reminder of what he did to our child. Every day I am faced with the repercussions of what happened to our son. And every day our son has to fight tooth and nail to be able to do things that come so naturally to other kids. He wasn't born with a disability. It's not something that he was supposed to have. This is something that somebody did to him. And I can't forgive that. And I know I probably should. But I think every day that I see what my son goes through, it just is, it's like a slap in the face. You know, it's right back to where I was, you know, right back to, you know, being so angry. Every time, every year we go in for this neuropsych eval, I get this blatant reminder of the struggles that my son, you know, anytime they're, you know, they say, okay, well, this is a new problem, or we're seeing that he's, you know, regressing here, or, you know, he's not advancing, and, you know, here's the plans that we need to come up with for him so that he either goes into an assisted living home, or he stays with you, or whatever. And I get so angry because, like I said, I sit there and I think to myself, I think, God, this was not supposed to be your life. And it makes me so mad. And I know at some point I should come to peace with it. I should try, but I can't bring myself to do it yet. I really can't. And I don't even know how I would. I really don't. I don't know how I would make peace with it. So, this time of year when I have to do these evals with my son, it brings up a lot, and it's a very, very difficult time. I mean, he loves it. He loves it because he gets a day out of school. I mean, how lucky is this kid, right? He gets a 4-day weekend, goes back to school one day, and then he misses all of the next day. So he's really only got 2 days of school this week. So he's cool with it, right? Like, we get to go to the cafeteria, children's hospital. He gets to eat, you know, lunch. He gets to hang out. He's just got to do some tests and, you know, read some stuff and just kick back and kind of relax. He gets a kick out of it. You know, and maybe that's the secret. You know, maybe I'm not doing him any favors by harboring the animosity and the anger that I have and the frustration and holding on to that feeling of, you know, my son was supposed to have a different life. Maybe that's not helping him. Because I see it in his eyes too. You know, he knows what happened to him. He knows, because at some point he got old enough and he was so frustrated. And he's like, why am I different? Why am I not in the same classes as my brother? Why can I not do the things that my brother and other kids can do? So there had to be a discussion and explanation of what was going on with him and how it happened and what happened. And now it sort of becomes a driving force for him sometimes of, you know, he's so frustrated because he knows that he's struggling with these things. And then because he knows he's struggling, he gets frustrated, and then he gets angry, and then he gets angry about the fact that he got angry. And it's so difficult for him. And I don't know, maybe if I can process it differently, maybe he will process it differently. I don't know. It's a constant, it's been a learning experience both for him and me. I mean, you know, there's no book about parenting. Well, there's a million books about parenting, but there's no definitive guide of, you know, how to be a parent. You, no matter what your best intentions are, how many books you read or how many child rearing seminars you go to, you're still going to end up doing it your way and the best way that you possibly can, just hoping and praying that you don't screw it up too much, right? Like, that's what we all do. Everybody's in it together. We're all just hanging on for dear life, trying to make sure we don't screw up our kids too bad. But for Gage, you know, we've been learning together. Nobody definitely gets a guide on how to raise a child who has a brain injury. You just do the best you can. Get as much help as you can. Get as much information as you can. You know? Test it out. things that worked yesterday don't necessarily work today. And the things that work today won't work 2 weeks from now. That's just how it is. And that's been our life, and that's been the way it's been. And like I said, it's very difficult for me living it day in, day out. You know, and part of it is me just being generally pissed. Like, I'm pissed. This guy completely changed our son's life. Completely changed my life in the process. Made my son's life harder than it ever needed to be. Ever. And he did very little jail time for it. And got to get out and go about and live his life like he didn't do anything wrong. What he did to our son didn't affect him in any way other than cause him to lose a little bit of freedom for a little bit. That's all it did. He hasn't had to deal with any of the other repercussions. I think that probably pisses me off too. Our son struggles every single day. And he doesn't have to deal with any of that. And he wouldn't anyway. Because until they're old enough to legally make that decision, he's never allowed around him. If they ever want to track him down and find him when they're older, that's up to them. But until that day, hell will freeze over before he sees them. You don't get to completely devastate my son's life and pop in like nothing ever happened. Not that I think he wants to. He was perfectly content to walk away. So wow, this is sort of like a very deep, crazy podcast. It's not my typical lighthearted podcast. If you stuck through the whole thing, listening to me cry and blubber a little bit and go on, I appreciate that. I hope that, I don't know, it's wrong to say I hope you enjoyed this, because I mean, maybe you found something in it. I hope you found something in it. If nothing else, you have a little bit of a deeper understanding of what goes on in our household and with a child with a brain injury and how our lives are impacted. But, maybe it can be something of a lesson to you of, you know, I struggle with my own demons of trying to see if that's ever possible for me to even drag up some microscopic speck of forgiveness for my ex, but he did something that was pretty devastating. So maybe if you're dealing with something with your ex or somebody in your life that seemed like a big deal, and now in comparison, maybe not so much, maybe it'll help you find that forgiveness that you need to find to be able to repair or continue that relationship or improve that relationship. I don't know. Maybe that's something in comparison. Listening to it, maybe going, well, the issue I have with my ex isn't nearly that bad. Maybe I should, give him a call and say, hey, it's no biggie. I don't know. But I hope that you got something out of this. Again, even if it's just a deeper understanding of what goes on and what's happened with my son, because I know that I've mentioned in several podcasts that I would go a little deeper into what happened to my son and all of that. So I finally lived up to that promise. I may do a podcast later and let you know how everything turned out, or maybe just a blog post instead of an actual podcast. So if you are not subscribed to our podcast, please do so. If you are not going to thesinglemomblog.com to check out our blog posts, because I don't always do podcasts. Sometimes they're just blogs. Please go do that. There's a ton of information there. Some free stuff you can download. You can join our newsletter. You can get, there's a 52 weeks of single mom success awesomeness, where you get sort of an email boost every week to celebrate how awesome you are as a mom. So yeah, there's a lot. Go over there and check it out if you haven't done so. So please subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. I'm on Pinterest too. I like to post a lot of fun stuff that looks like fun but never actually end up doing, you know, the normal Pinterest stuff. And also Instagram. There's a lot of social media channels. They're in the blog. You can follow us there. So I hope you have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening to me absolutely lose my shit a couple of times. But, you know, sometimes it's cathartic. I hope that you guys have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. You've been listening to the Single Mom Podcast, the place to go for support, encouragement, and maybe a few laughs along the way. Please also make sure you head on over to the Single Mom blog for more great stuff for single moms. We have resources, free things to print out, great articles. Can't wait to see you there. Be sure to leave feedback and comments, because we love hearing from other single moms. And if you like this podcast, please be sure to subscribe.